this is offertory, but there's some interesting things that I've been wanting to talk about, and so I'm going to talk about them. Where I work, there was this fellow that always watches the History Channel, and Dennis Loris referred to him as the History Channel, because every time he'd come over to the garage, he'd give us the latest thing he had heard. And so one day he was in here and he's telling us that scientists just recently, and this was like last year, I had the date written down, I think it was in June, of last year, that these scientists put this information together, how much water is really under the earth. And I'll read you this statement. It says, scientists now are convinced that there are three times as much water under the surface than what is on or in the oceans, the rivers, and the lakes. Three times. So if you got three times and then you got the water that's up there, that's four times as much. So I thought, well, this is kind of interesting, so I got to check all this out with what God says in the Bible. So that's what I was going to present today, is what scientists, first, what they have come up with, and then what the Bible says about it, and how it applies to, well, actually, to explain what God's going to do with all this water. And that has to do with the Feast of Tabernacles and the end of this age. So we'll begin. So scientists are now convinced. Oh, I read that. Okay. God decides that if you go to Genesis 6, and I'll go to verse 6 and 7, and I'm not going to read it, I'm just going to, in general. God decides to destroy man because of his continued wickedness. And this is where he makes up his mind to flood the earth and drowned everyone except Noah, who had favor with him, and his six sons, and Noah's wife, and their six sons' wives. So, in the 600th, in Genesis 7:11, if you want to go there, in the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, in the seventh day of heaven, were opened, and the rain was on the earth for 40 nights. But the one part you got to pay attention to is of the month and of that day, all the fountains of the great deep were broken up. Well, that's where, no doubt, the majority of all this water came from. Because the atmosphere can only hold so much. But if it's spraying up out of all these fountains of the deep, a tremendous, all over the world, all at the same time, then it's going to go into the atmosphere, plus it's going to hit all the dry land and evaporate, and so real quickly your atmosphere is full of it. But it's also coming up underneath the oceans and the rivers and the mountains, and it's flowing, and it's filling the earth. Actually, I started a little bit backwards when I said, because I'm doing the Bible side of it first. That it still works either way. And God, then we go to Genesis 8:2. And God made a wind pass over the earth, and the waters subsided, and the rain from heaven was restrained. And the waters receded continually on the earth at the end of the 150 days, the waters decreased, and the ark rested on the mountain on the 17th day, Genesis 8:5, and the waters decreased continually for 10 months, that's 300 days. So, God could bring it all up that quick, flood the whole earth to the highest peaks of the mountains, and then in 300 days, he had it all gone again. So, kind of makes you think there might be a place for it to go to. It didn't go out in outer space. I always wondered about that. Where is all this water coming and going from? Well, we'll get to that. Isaiah 41:18. I will open up rivers in desolate heights, and fountains in the midst of the valleys. I will make the wilderness a pool of water, and the dry land springs of water. Now this is, we jump from Noah's time up to the future, the near future. Isaiah 41:19. I will plant in the wilderness a cedar, the acacia tree, the myrtle, the oil tree. I will set in the desert the cypress tree, the pine tree, and the box tree together, that they may see and know and all consider and understand together that the hand of the Lord has done this and the Holy One of Israel has created it. So he'll make those seeds and seedlings arrive there at that time. I don't know how he does it. He's got a lot of angels, millions of them, so I suppose they'll do it. Isaiah 2:2. Now it came to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains, and it shall be exalted above the hills, and all the nations shall flow to it. 2:3. Many people shall come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we shall walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. Isaiah 2:4. He shall judge between the nations and rebuke many people. They shall beat their swords into plowshares, their spears into pruning hooks. And nations shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. Now turn to Isaiah 35:1. The wilderness and the wasteland shall be glad for them, and the desert shall rejoice and blossom as the rose. Then Isaiah 35:6. Then the lame shall leap like a deer, and the tongue of the dumb shall sing. For waters shall burst forth in the wilderness and streams in the desert. So he's doing the same thing again, only it's modified. He's not going to flood the earth. He's going to supply it. Everyone's going to have the amount of water they need. The parched, in 35:7, the parched ground shall become a pool, and the thirsty land springs of water. This kind of reminds me of driving when we went to the feast in Tucson. I was driving down through Nevada from Reno to Las Vegas, that road through there. We didn't see anything growing as far as you could look. It was flat, sandy, once in a while a weed that already died. And I was riding with Gilbert, and we was just talking about these scriptures. I said, well, both of us was talking about it, how when God intervenes, this is going to be a different looking place. I already mentioned all the trees he's going to plant there and supply the water. Now we go to Zechariah 14:1. Behold, the day of the Lord is coming, for I will gather all nations against Jerusalem. Now, I think we heard this twice this morning already, but you can hear it again. The city will be taken, the houses rifled, and the women ravished. Half the city shall go into captivity, but the remnant of the people shall not be cut off from the city. Then the Lord will go up and fight against these nations as he fought against in the day of battle. And in that day his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives, which faces Jerusalem to the east, and the Mount of Olives shall split in two from east to west, making a very large valley. Half the mountains shall move towards the north and half of it to the south. And then 14:5, at the end of 14:5, thus the Lord my God will come, and the saints with you. Zechariah 14:7. And it shall be one day which is known to the Lord, neither day nor night, but at eventime it shall happen that it will be light. Verse 8. In that day it shall be that the living waters shall flow from Jerusalem, half of them toward the eastern sea and half of them toward the western sea, in both summer and winter to occur, and the Lord shall be king over all the earth. Now we'll drop down to verse Zechariah 16. And it shall, 14:16. And it shall come to pass that everyone who is left of all the nations that came against Jerusalem shall go up from year to year to worship the King of the Lord of hosts and keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And it shall be that whichever the families of the earth do not come to Jerusalem to worship the King and the Lord on them, there shall be no rain. Well, imagine that, God punishing people with no rain. Well, he's withheld these waters he's put down there under the ground from almost the beginning, waiting to see what man's going to do. And man didn't do too much. Matter of fact, he just rebelled continually against God. But he kept the rain there, except when he brought it up to wipe out all of those people around Noah. And then he said he wouldn't do that again. No more worldwide floods. But he did it. If the family of Egypt will not come up and enter, there shall be no rain, and they shall receive the plague with which the Lord strikes the nations who do not come up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. Now I'm going to go to the scientific thing. It's a fairly short read, and let's see, how many minutes do I use? I only used 10 minutes. How many did I get? 45? I don't think so. It says, name of this article, Massive Ocean Discovered Towards Earth's Core. Well, actually, it's about 326 miles down to it, and to where it ends is about 410 miles. So that's about 90 miles thick, where they actually could measure it. And I'll read that to you. It's pretty interesting. A reservoir of water three times the volume of all the oceans has been discovered deep beneath the Earth's surface. The findings could help explain where the Earth's seas came from. The water is hidden inside a blue rock called ringwoodite. Now, I looked up ringwoodite, and it's named after Albert Ringwood, I think. I think it was Albert. And so he gets to put an ite on his name, and I looked at all the other elements on this list, and everybody's got an ite after their name. So maybe there'll be a gradite sometime, or a herosite, I don't know. I said herosite, not parasite. So that's under the underground mantle and the layer of hot rock between the Earth's surface and its core. So that's kind of a barrier there. But the barrier is made up of this ringwoodite. The huge size of the reservoir throws new light into the origins of the Earth's water. Some geologists think water arrived in comets as they struck the planet, but the new discovery supports an alternative idea that the oceans gradually oozed out of the interior of the early Earth. It's good evidence that the Earth's water came from within, says Stephen Jacobson, a Northwestern University, Evanville, Illinois. The hidden water could also act as a buffer for the ocean on the surface, explaining why they have stayed the same size for millions of years. It's like a reservoir that comes up and down. And we already know that, because God can bring water up and he can take it back down, which he's done in his word. All right, pinging the planet is the headline of this next paragraph. This is how they discovered all this. Jacobson's team used 2,000 seismometers to study the seismic waves generated by more than 500 earthquakes. These waves move through the Earth's interior, including the core, and can be detected at the surface. They make the Earth ring like a bell for days afterwards, these earthquakes. By measuring the speed of the waves at different depths, the team could figure out which types of rocks the waves were passing through. The water layer revealed it itself because the waves slowed down as it takes them longer to get through soggy rock than dry rock. Jacobson's worked out in advance what would happen to the waves if the water containing ringwoodite was present. He grew a ringwoodite in the lab, exposed it to samples to massive pressures and temperatures matching those at 400 feet deep. Sure enough, they found signs of the wet ringwoodite in the transition zone 400 miles down, which divides the upper and lower regions of the mantle. At the depth of the pressure and the temperature are just right to squeeze out the waters out of the ringwoodite. The rock with water along the boundaries between the grains, almost as if they were sweating, he said. Jacob's findings were supported in a recent study by Graham Pearson's University of Alberta in Edmonton, Canada. Pearson studied a diamond from the transition zone that had been carried to the surface in a volcano and found that it contained water-bearing ringwoodite, and the first strong evidence that there was lots of water in the transition zone. Since our initial report of hydrous ringwood, we found another ringwood crystal also containing water, so the evidence is now very strong. We should be grateful for this reservoir, says Jacobson's. If it wasn't there, it would be on the surface of the earth, the water would, and the mountain tops would be the only land poking out. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And the water apparently is there, and of course we know from the Bible it is there, but scientists just have come to this realization. But I doubt if they're going to come out and say they believe Noah was here and the ark and the flood and all that. They just have trouble doing that. Even the guy that put me onto this is an avowed atheist, Mr. History Channel, that comes down. I've tried to convert him, but I'm not getting very far. So we'll take up the offering now.